And for those of virtually online, we actually have our city attorney in the house tonight.
Wow.
I'm very glad to be here. 62 degrees versus 90.
Much better. Very good. So we do have 6 o'clock. So I will call to order our city council meeting, which is still virtual, for Monday, May 24th, 2021. It is 6 p.m. This is our call to order, and in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders, our meetings are still being held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org, which is always a wonderful thing to say. And the fact that if you're not actually watching this, you don't know why I just said that. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling 805-321-6639, and the phone lines are currently open. So that will take us to our moment of silence. And I do want to take a moment this evening and read something from the social media feed for Grover Beach Police from last week, where it is from last week's services for Detective Benedetti. So we're, the post goes, yesterday, our officers are participated in the funeral services for Detective Benedetti of SLO PD. It was an honor and a privilege to be part of the procession, and we could not have been more humbled by the way the people who lined up our route along the entire way. We at Grover Beach Police Department want to continue expressing our sincere condolences to the SLO PD and the Benedetti family. To Detective Orozco, we wish a continued swift recovery. We also want to take this opportunity to thank the community for their incredible support throughout this entire time. And so as we take a moment of silence, I would like to extend the condolences of all of us and our city family, and especially our emergency services family, on behalf of the Benedetti family and the service that he has provided. Thank you for joining us in that moment of silence. So that will take us to our flag salute, where we have Chief Lieberman, who's representing the Vice City Fire Authority, but is also emergency services first responder. And so Chief, if you would be we'd be honored to have you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, and thank you so much for this honor. If everyone could place their hand over their heart and repeat silently after me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. And that'll bring us back to our roll call. Madam City Clerk, please.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
Here. So we do have a quorum, so we will go ahead and continue, which will take us to our closed session announcements, where I'll call on our city attorney, Mr. David Hale.
Thank you, Mayor. We have no closed session announcements this evening.
Very good. Thank you for that. That will take us to our agenda review, where at this time the City Council can review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Let's see if any member of the council has any questions about the order of the agenda, or if not, I'm prepared to accept a motion to proceed as published.
Well, seeing that there are no questions, I will make a motion that we accept the agenda as published.
I'll second that motion. Oh,
there you go.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Very good. Motion carries. We will proceed as published. So that takes us to our ceremonial calendar. And I am going to apologize up front because I did not ask anyone to do this proclamation. But I'd be honored if Councilmember Miller, if you would be interested in doing the proclamation for the Hunger Awareness Day.
I would be happy to do that. Give me just one moment.
And as you're bringing that up, I do understand, let's confirm with our city clerk that Mr. Garrett Olson, the CEO of the Slow Food Bank, will be receiving the proclamation once it's read.
Yes, he is online.
Very good, thank you.
All right. Whereas the SLO Food Bank is the leading hunger relief organization in the country, and whereas the SLO Food Bank was founded in 1989 and has provided 32 years of hunger relief throughout the community, and whereas the SLO Food Bank provides the backbone infrastructure for hunger relief and is the primary source of quality and affordable food for over 80 partner nonprofit agencies that feed the hungry, and whereas the SLO Food Bank and its coalition partners deliver nutritious food to those in need to every community in the county, from Napomo to San Miguel, on the coast of Los Osos to San Simeon, and to the points east, including Creston, Shandon, and California Valley. And whereas the SLO Food Bank provides millions of pounds of only the most wholesome nutrition, which advances and promotes important public health outcomes. And whereas the SLO Food Bank is coordinating a countywide promotion called Hunger Awareness Day on June 4th this year, and whereas the SLO Food Bank believes that the people of our county will rally in a one-day push to donate funds needed to alleviate local hunger, and whereas people giving donations on June 4th, 2021 can raise the funds needed to help alleviate hunger. Pardon me. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council is proclaiming June 4th, 2021 as Hunger Awareness Day in Grover Beach.
Very good. Thank you for reading that proclamation. Let's see if Mr. Olson is on the line to receive the proclamation and provide any comments.
I am on the line. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you, sir.
Wonderful. Mayor and Council, thank you so much for this proclamation and shining a light on this really important issue in our community. The SLO Food Bank, our mission is to alleviate hunger countywide, and the scope of that mission is countywide. But I want to bring it home to Grover Beach for you and share with the council and your listeners the impact of the SLO Food Bank on the city of Grover Beach. We have 9 Grover Beach agency partners. Those are other nonprofits that are on the front line of hunger relief that receive food from the SLO Food Bank to provide to their clients in need. Using those agency partners really maximizes the penetration and reach of our services. We also provide direct hunger relief through SLO Food Bank trucks that come to Grover Beach and partner with volunteers in your beautiful community and provide assistance to those in need. We also provide no-cook bags, and those no-cook bags are really important to folks in the community that don't have access to a kitchen. And oftentimes we find that law enforcement will secure no cook bags from the food bank, and they use those as an olive branch when they need to engage with some homeless folks to talk to them about either their behavior or something that they might have witnessed. And we're really proud that those no cook bags are such a vital olive branch to our law enforcement and to our Transitions Mental Health partners. Finally, we provide breakfast bags to children, and we used to just do that in the summer months when school meals were on hiatus. But 2020 really redefined what the school year was like. And so we've been providing children's breakfast bags ever since the beginning of the pandemic, and we continue to do so. Each one of those has 21 nutritious meals that a child can prepare by his or herself. And finally, we started a brand new service during the pandemic when we identified isolated seniors that because of public health reasons weren't able to get out and get food. And then as that program guided to allow them to shelter in place came to a close, we identified seniors that were also in need. And so we've expanded our operations to serve those seniors through a home delivery program. And so real quickly, I just have a couple seconds left. I'll let you know that food insecurity absolutely exploded in 2020. The SLO Food Bank distributed 5.1 million pounds of food to the community in 2020, up from 3.1 million the prior year. And Hunger Awareness Day, as you mentioned, is June 4th. And we are so honored and proud of the efficiency of our operations, where we turn every dollar donated into an astounding 7 nutritious meals. And local donors, like the amazing citizens of Grover Beach that lean in and assist, account for the lifeblood of our operations. About 3/4 of our operations comes from local donors at every dollar level. And so for as little as $10 a month, If you go to slowfoodbank.org, you can feed an amazing 70 people a month. So I challenge you to go anywhere else with $10 in your pocket and know that you're going to be able to provide a meal to 70 people. But that's the magic of the Slow Food Bank. And we just really, really appreciate your support and shining a light on this important issue in our community.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Olson, for that update. And I had one question before I turn it over to the council members to see if there's any questions on their side. Is can you give us just a quick thumbnail of what's going to happen on June 4th? Is it all going to be virtual, or are you going to have folks at specific locations like you have in years past soliciting donations?
That is a great question. Thank you. We're going to have a hybrid this year. We are really excited that we're going to be able to have 12 locations. And if you go to slowfoodbank.org, you can find all the information about Hunger Awareness Day and a quick, easy way to donate online. But there'll be 12 locations throughout the county, as well as our virtual opportunity for people to give online.
Very good. Thank you for that, Mr. Olson. Let's see if looks like Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Bright has her mic off, so I'm anticipating she has a question.
Actually, I don't have a question. I just have a comment.
Okay, that works too.
Okay, thank you. I just want to thank you for all that you do. The food bank has always been something that's very near and dear to my family's heart. And so I just want to, again, just thank you so much for all that you do, not only for our community, but for the county as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you. That means the world to us. And to play on to the mayor's question, we will be at the Vons at 1758 West Grand Avenue from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Hunger Awareness Day on June 4th. So we'd love for people to come out, whether you give or you just come and express appreciation. All of it really lifts our spirits and fuels our mission.
Well, thank you. That's good to know. We'll make sure that we're there. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very good. Let's see by a show of unmuting yourselves if any other council members have questions or comments. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I, too, want to thank you for providing vital service to our community, especially in this during this pandemic, when a lot of our community members have maybe reduced incomes, there's financial fragility and food insecurity is a real thing. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we have yet to see the need in our communities recede to where they were pre-pandemic, which was already a really tragic starting point of 1 in 6 Slo County residents that were food insecure before the pandemic. And it's just escalated since then. So thank you so much for your comments.
Very good. Well, thank you, Mr. Olson, for the work that that your organization is doing. I look forward to participating online. So for virtual donations and then possibly stopping by and talking to folks at the Vons on June 4th. So very good. Thank you, sir. So that will take us to Thank you. That will take us to our next ceremonial calendar item, which is a proclamation for Pride Month. And Councilmember Rushing is prepared to read this proclamation, and Ms. Heather Boehner is here to receive the proclamation.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. So whereas the city of Grover Beach is honored to recognize Pride Month and celebrate members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community who live and work here, and whereas the city aligns with countywide and statewide initiatives and policies that advance the LGBTQ community's journey toward equality and strives to create a safe, inclusive society in which all community members are treated fairly, with dignity and respect, and in all settings. And whereas last year marked the first year of flying the Pride flag at Grover Beach City Hall as a symbol of support for the LGBTQ community, which the city will fly again in 2021. And whereas the city of Grover Beach takes pride in the fact that we are a vibrant, diverse community and proudly joins other communities in striving to build a stronger, better state and nation for all residents. And whereas as June 2021 marks the 52nd anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising in New York City, and the city of Grover Beach is dedicated to continuing efforts to ensure equality and respect for all. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach does hereby designate June 2021 as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Rushing, for reading that proclamation. And I'll turn to our city clerk to bring Ms. Heather Boehner into the meeting for comments or to receive the proclamation.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi. So my name's Heather, and I'm here on behalf of our local LGBTQIA plus nonprofit, Five Cities Hope. We just wanted to say thank you to the City of Grover Beach for their proclamation of Pride Month. We thank you for your recognition and your support of the queer community. It is through proclamations like this that the community can gain better acceptance and support. So again, on behalf of Five Cities Hope, we want to say thank you, Grover Beach. We also wanted to include that you can find us on Facebook as we continue to move forward and beat COVID as a community, and hope to put on more events with you guys. As well as we wanted to let you know that we do have one in-person thing that we do. It's a youth group that meets every other Wednesday, the first and the third Wednesday at Elm Street Park. So if there are any youth needing extra support, let us know. We'll be there first and third Wednesday at Elm Street Park. And again, just wanted to say thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you for your comments. And actually, one quick question for you on the youth group activity. Is there are you there all day, or is there a particular time period that you're in the park?
Oh, I'm sorry. It is from 5 to 6:30.
Perfect. And I'm assuming that's going to be p.m. because I don't know too many youth who are up at that time of the morning. So very good. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for what your organization does as well. So let's see by a show of unmiking them, unmuting themselves, if there's any council members that want to have any questions or comments for you. Very good. I don't see anybody unmuting themselves. So Heather, I will say thank you for being here this evening. We've supported Five Cities Hope in the past, and we look forward to continuing that. I find it heartwarming that we can say thank you to the service of a SLO police officer this evening, as well as being able to present the diversity of Five Cities Hope in our community without the need to defend either side, because we, as it says in the proclamation, we are a diverse community who's accepting of all, and want to make sure that continues in more ways than we know how to count. So with that, I will say thank you, Ms. Boehner, and unless there's any last parting comments that you want to make.
No, we are just so grateful for the recognition. Again, thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you. So that will close our ceremonial calendar this evening and take us to our presentations. So where we do have an update from Chief Lieberman on the Five Cities Fire Authority. So Chief, the proverbial floor is yours.
Well, good evening again, Mayor and Council and staff. Steve Lieberman, your fire chief. City Manager Bronson asked me to share what's going on with the Fire Authority. So I have a brief presentation to pass along to you. And Wendy Sims, our clerk, will be my navigator with the presentation. And there it is. Okay, so as you can imagine from the main screen, it's been quite a year for many of us in 2020, and we were really looking forward to getting through 2020 and moving into 2021 and having things be better on multiple fronts. And I'm as optimistic as anyone, but I just wanted to bring you up to speed on what were some historic and significant experiences that we joined the rest of the community in as your emergency responders. And from the front opening screen here, you can see our recent work at a commercial fire at Walmart Arroyo Grande, along with some subtle signage as a reminder of COVID and the mass vaccination clinics. Wendy, if you could move to the next slide, please. So I don't think anyone in emergency services and the fire service really thought that there would be a worldwide pandemic that would impact us just along with the rest of our communities. I don't think any of us expected an emergency medical technician, EMT, firefighter to be giving vaccinations to our community members. I don't think any of us expected, you know, those personal impacts when people got sick and the impacts on their family. Five Cities Fire Authority was in the middle of it, along with our other partners. As a matter of fact, besides responding to calls to our community and working hard to keep our employees safe to maintain that operational readiness, our Type 3 incident management team in the county, which is not known as an all-hazards incident management team, truly stepped up and worked with the county public health department to establish two of the three mass vaccination sites in Paso Robles and Arroyo Grande. An incident management team's deployment is typically 2 to 3 weeks, and this was a multi-month deployment. We went from January through March. So really proud of the success, really proud of the relationships and the partnerships that were garnered along the way, because they'll all come in handy as we face more challenges. Wendy, next slide, please. And then there was fire season. So there's a running joke with fire chiefs that every year someone shows up on the TV news in around early June and says this could be the worst fire season in California history. And sadly, 2020 was actually the worst fire season in California history. To the right of the slide, you'll see a handful of incidents that the Five Cities Fire Authority responded to, whether it was sending an engine and crew, sending specially trained single resource staff to assist with these. I deployed on a couple of incidents as part of a national area command team, but the experience was, while the experience was great every time you can work a large incident, the exhaustion factor from not getting a break is still haunting us to an extent in the fire service as we prepare for 2021. I will say, because sometimes people are concerned about the expense from responding to these incidents, and for the most part, we fully recoup our out-of-pocket costs by going and helping other neighbors throughout the state, or, for example, in Colorado. The Five Cities Fire Authority has recovered over $700,000 in unbudgeted revenue, with several hundred thousand dollars of that being reimbursement for vehicles and our administrative fees. So while not a great way to generate revenues, we definitely covered our costs. Next slide, please. So the state of the organization, I'm sorry for all the words here, but I want to tell you that your fire department remains strong and mission capable. We're there to respond to our communities and to help those outside of our communities when we can. I think it's important that the council see that our call volume increased by over 10% over 2019. That's a significant change. We can say that a portion of it was related to the coronavirus response, and mutual aid requests. But overall, even though there was a downturn in certain call types, like while we were all staying at home, there were fewer vehicles on the road, so there were thankfully fewer traffic collisions. Our call volume did grow in 2020. The fire board this past Friday approved the fiscal year 21-22 budget. You'll see an asterisk after this bullet and the next one, and the asterisk just really reflects that, as the Joint Powers Authority Agreement calls out, that our funding is not officially approved for expenditure use until all three member communities unanimously approve the budget. So while I'm confident with the third amendment to our JPA agreement that the funding will be approved, that is why our board took action early, knowing that their decision was contingent upon these requirements. So the third amendment to the JPA, what this does is it places community financial contributions on a fixed basis at 1920, so fiscal year 2019-2020 levels. So while staff was able to control our operating expenditures and keep them flat year over year, as you know, if you run a business or when you look at other budgets, such as the city of Grover Beach, you'll see that in a service-based business model, it's really employee-based, And a lot of those employee-based costs are non-controllable, whether it's workers' comp insurance premiums, the increase in benefits, any number of factors. So there was a slight increase, but we did our best to keep it as flat as possible. Another work program that was identified in the Third Amendment to the JPA was to do some financial and data analysis looking at different service delivery models or Five Cities Fire versus a Cal Fire contract. And with the support of financial staff in Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, that work product, the majority of it is completed. I'll just be packaging it to present to the city and district managers, followed by the fire board, and then our member community elected boards in the coming months. Next slide, please. So, you know, people always say I'm the prince of doom and gloom, but I also need to be very honest with you, being an administrator of an emergency services organization. A headline I took from ABC 7 News is California's 2021 wildfire season could be extreme. All of the models, the fuel moisture models, the weather pattern projections, everything is indicating that 2021's fire season is going to be on par, if not more extreme than 2020. I found an interesting graph that's to the left of this slide from the New York Times, and I don't know how easy you can see it, but off to the right, those gray lines are reflecting fire season severity, and 2020 was just off the charts. So what are we doing about it? We're focusing on our wildland fire training classes, our required annual refresher training, really taking advantage of any kind of field exercise, especially those with live fire training when possible. Our crews have spent several days up at Camp Roberts doing controlled burn exercises and a coordinated response to a wildfire with multiple agencies from San Luis Obispo, Monterey, and Santa Barbara counties, along with aircraft. We're replacing needed equipment to keep us ready to respond to these incidents. We do have an open captain's position that we're working to fill to create more depth in staffing, because as you can imagine, when crews are away from home for up to 3 weeks on an out-of-county assignment, that also requires personnel to stay in that fire station to cover them for that three-week period. So it does take a toll on the family. So we're trying to create more depth in staffing for flexibility. Obviously, our number one goal is to protect our communities and then obviously support other communities via the California Mutual Aid System. Forward momentum. So let's talk about what's happening. I already talked about the promotion. What that will do is create some upward mobility within the organization, which is exciting. We've enhanced our regional response, and just to spend a moment on that, there's not a fire department in San Luis Obispo County that's large enough or funded to a level to have its own specialized response team, such as hazardous materials or our Type 3 incident management team. And we know that we're better together, and there's several regional teams, including a technical rescue team, where the fire departments are all contributing personnel to focus on training and the equipment they need to serve all of us in a more efficient and cost-efficient manner. So we've added a person from Five Cities Fire to the county hazmat team, and we've added an additional safety officer to the incident management team, and we're looking to add one of our battalion chiefs as well in the coming months. Training, lots of training going on. The city manager asked me to come speak to you because of an email where I was talking about all the training that's going on. The training goes anywhere from professional development. So you're investing in your future and future promotion by taking state fire marshal, company officer, or chief officer coursework or technical skills. When people call the fire department, they're expecting us to be able to come and help them when they can no longer help themselves. And so we've focused on a lot of technical skills in the last couple of months, and we've been able to partner with the city of Arroyo Grande and the city of Grover Beach to accomplish that. Needed equipment, I've already mentioned that. And it's a really hard one. This last bullet is stressing the need for our community preparedness to get our residents to really focus on what they would do if they were without power for 48 hours to 72 hours from one of the public safety power shutoffs. So when PG&E announces that they need to shut down part of the electrical grid to reduce or mitigate fire threat, you know, what is our plan for that as citizens of Grover Beach? Other things, weed abatement. So we're in the middle of our annual weed abatement program. So inspections have taken place. People that are in violation of the weed abatement code have been notified. The board's ratified the list of folks that have been notified that they need to abate their properties. And then in June, at the June 11th meeting, the board will take final action. So we'll do a reinspection after May 28th to give people an opportunity to abate their properties. And after that time, we will have a contractor go in and abate the properties as needed, and then attach those costs to their property tax roll. Fuel reduction, it's a fancy word for saying, if you live near open space, you need to make sure you have a defensible space around your home. So you cut down vegetation, you keep it at a manageable level. If you have oak trees or any kind of tree growing up with grasses and fuels underneath, you want to reduce the limbs, you want to increase that height by at least 3 feet. And if you have a beautiful tree that's intruding and getting underneath your roof eaves, we'd love for you to trim that branch to keep it away from your home. There's a lot of information at Ready, Set, Go, but I just wanted to touch on those items. Thanks, Wendy. So just a couple of photos to share with you. Trench rescue. This is a very infrequent need for a response, but there's a lot of risk and there's a lot of danger with pulling someone out of a trench that is partially collapsed. So our response has to be methodical and well-considered, and we need to make sure we're keeping both the victims and our firefighters safe. So this was a trench rescue course in Arroyo Grande. The city let us excavate a portion of one of their city-owned lots, which we did clean up afterwards. It's interesting to note that the plywood sheeting you see here will be recycled and used for our roof ventilation training later this year. So we'll be able to go through two technical training exercises with the same materials. Next slide. Driver operator. So this is you may think it's a very basic class. How do you drive a piece of emergency equipment? And to a certain level, you're right. But then what do you do with this equipment when you get to the scene of a fire? And knowing how to work the pump panel and knowing how to do all the equations to flow the amount of water at the end of a hose to make sure that the water coming out of that nozzle tip is manageable by the firefighter and sufficient to put out a fire is very technical, and a lot of math is involved. We're fortunate to have an engineer with our department, Mark Searby, who's state certified to teach both driver operator 1A, 1B, along with trench rescue. When we have a class like driver operator, we open it to the outside. So we had folks from Atascadero, other departments in the county. We had two firefighters from the South San Francisco Fire Department. When those folks pay their class fees, it allows our employees to attend the training at no cost. So it's definitely a win-win situation for all students involved. I want to thank the City of Grover Beach for allowing us to flow some water at Mentone Basin, and all of the water that we used was returned to the water table at Mentone Basin. And I believe that wraps up my presentation. If there's any questions, I'd love to try to answer them. I appreciate Ms. Sims driving this PowerPoint for me, and thank you for the opportunity to share this information.
I think you're on mute still, Mayor Lee.
Thank you for that. I have a touchy mute button tonight. I went on and off mute there about three times, so I thought was in the right toggle. But Chief, thank you for that presentation. Let's turn it over to the council to see if there's any questions. I'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any questions or comments.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I appreciate the presentation. It was very timely. I was starting to wonder about you folks, how you were doing and all. I am very, very surprised to hear that we had a call volume increase of 10%. My goodness. But No, I don't have any questions. Thank you very much, though. I appreciate all you do. Thanks for being there for when we need you. So stay healthy, please. It was nice seeing you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller, any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you. I just want to acknowledge your impactful work and let you know my appreciation for the work that you do to keep our communities safe from fires and viruses. It's quite a lot there. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I too, Chief. Thank you very much for what you do, keeping us safe and the dangers you go through. We certainly appreciate it, and all your men greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Very good. And Councilmember Rushing.
Chief Lieberman, thank you so much. I don't have any questions, but your crew is always amazing. You are an amazing leader, and thank you so much for bringing everything that you do to our community. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very good. I'll just echo those appreciation as well. Keep everybody safe. Keep everybody well-trained, and that's the best way to keep everybody safe. And then having the understanding and the education in the community for being fire prepared, and weed abatement prepared and PSPS prepared is a great way to keep our firefighters out of harm's way. So very good. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. And we will now turn to our public communications. So where during this time, the council will allow public comment with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council, and the council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So if anyone does want to call in for public comment, that number is 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if we have anyone on the line for public comment.
No, we have no one on the line at this moment.
Very good. Thank you for that. Then I will go ahead and close public comments and bring it back to the council for the next item on the agenda, which is our consent agenda, where we have a number of routine items, a large number of routine items tonight that are scheduled for consideration as a group. So let's see if there is any member of the council that has any questions or wants to pull any item from the consent calendar for separate action. So let's start with Councilmember Rushing.
No, I have no questions and would like to keep the consent agenda as is, please.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I agree. No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
None from me. Thank you.
Very good. And Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, thank you. All my questions were answered earlier. Thank you very much.
Very good. And I don't have any questions either. I may have a quick comment afterwards, but let's open this up to the public and see if anyone wants to make a comment on any item of the consent agenda. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if there's anyone on the line for public comments under the consent agenda.
We have Mr. Weissong on the phone, and he wanted to make a comment to for under item three, actually, for the fire chief.
Okay, very good. Then we'll go ahead and bring him in now for public comments under the presentation. Good evening, sir.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, sir. Yep, you're. Good evening, John.
Hello. Yes. Is the fire chief still there?
Go ahead and make your comments.
I'd like to ask the fire chief.
Go ahead and make your public comments, sir, and we'll make sure that the chief is available for to answer to your question.
Yeah, I'm 88 years old. I'm struggling to serve my country, but my country doesn't like to serve me. And so, years ago, the fire chief from Rio Grande, I can't think of his name, but he has a nursing home. He come and moved my yard because I was been run over by a pickup and I couldn't do it. Well, I'm at the point right now where there's a neighbor on both sides of me. Neither one will mow the yard. So I'm wondering, is the city got somebody to come mow the yard for me? And second, I talked to a guy by the name of Fred Strong a year ago, and he finally got a hold of him tonight about Brighton and Oak Park. And I asked him to see if he could help me. He said, the state engineer said, it's not feasible. You know, I have never seen anything so horrible and so dysfunctional. Because on 4th Street, my son took me to the doctor day. And here's two kids trying to cross 4th Street on a crosswalk. And they punched a button and the light come on and they went across. Tell me, Mr. Attorney, in a letter of two paragraphs, why this isn't the same as 4th Street. It's in Grover Beach. I'm being expect a letter, a paragraph as to why and who do I talk to. That is the only place in the United States, and I've been across it 20 times, and that's the only place in the United States you can't get across the street. So, Mr. City Attorney, I will expect a letter from you, a paragraph. I'm done. Oh, fire. It's the bad fires. You know, a few months ago, they had goats on the TV in Paso Robles. You people, policies, if you bought a bunch of goats or the fire department or the state and put those goats out, you'd save a lot of houses and a lot of money. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for those comments. Let me check back in with our city clerk and see if anyone else has called in for public comments under specifically under the consent agenda.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comments and bring it back to the council and see. I'm not sure if the chief is still on the line with us and if he could possibly talk a little bit more about weed abatement and if there's any insights you can give us to goats and fuel management. If not, I can probably speak to it.
Chief Lieberman is no longer online.
Okay, very good. Then I will go ahead and respond to Mr. Weissong's comment and the fact that the city does not have folks that do the weed abatement specifically. However, if it does get to the point of a specific property that might have been on the list for required weed abatement, they do not follow the protocols, then the Five Cities Fire Authority does have a contract provider that can go out and do that. I don't know specifically if this, if the address that Mr. Weissong is speaking about is on the list, but if it is, then we anticipate and hope that the owners will do the right thing and do the appropriate weed abatement. If they don't, the weed abatement will be done by a contract provider and then sent an invoice or a bill all the way up to putting it on the property tax rolls if necessary. So with respect to Mr. Strong, Mr. Weissong mentioned, Fred is a council member from the city of Paso Robles, and he is also the head of SLOCOG, or I think he's the current chair of SLOCOG. I might be wrong, Councilmember Bright, or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you might be able to update me. But I know Mr. Weissong reaches out to Mr. Strong on occasion, and Mr. Strong updates me on the conversations, and as we've had many conversations in the past and come to the decision as a city that crosswalks on North Oak Park are not currently in the design criteria for that street. So, Mr. Hale, I don't know if you wanted to speak any further on that subject.
No, I think that adequately covered it.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close those comments with the exception of, I will say, other jurisdictions have used goats. There is a process that jurisdictions go through to do those, and they can be very helpful, but I don't know if Grover Beach has adequate quantities of weeds in the city to do a weed abatement on public land via goats. So, Councilmember Robert, I see that you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I was confused Mr. Weisong, I don't know if he's still with us, but was he asking for his neighbors to get mowed or for his own yard to get mowed? Did you catch that, Mayor?
I seem to recall that it was his an adjoining property to his. I don't think it was his specifically.
Okay. So thank you.
Okay. Very good. So with that, I will go ahead and bring it back to the council for the consent agenda. And so, not having had any public comment, not having any questions, I am prepared to see who's ready for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 4 through 12 as presented.
I'll second
that.
Very good. Looks like we have a motion by Councilor Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and I'll say a second by Councilmember Miller. And I'll turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes, very good. So we do have an approved consent agenda. And my only comment was I appreciate staff bringing forward a number of items on the consent agenda that show the good work that continues to move forward in the city, from either K-14, awarding of professional services, community development block grants, where we do have an opportunity in a 3-year cycle to have replaced all of our undersized water lines, 2 to 1 and 2 inch lines, and upgrade those to 4 inch plus lines. So I think that's a testament to our community development block grant opportunities, and the design and the activism that our city staff puts into making sure that we have a good infrastructure and a good foundation within our city. So with that, we'll consider the consent agenda complete and move on to our public hearings, where we have no public hearings tonight, but we do have 2 regular business items. And if we open up a discussion on the permanent outdoor operations policy direction, I'll introduce Community Development Director Buckingham and invite folks to call in on this item under 805-321-6639 for public comment after the presentation. Mr. Buckingham, good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. We're pleased to bring this item to you tonight, and I will begin with some background. Next slide. So on July 13th of 2020, the California Department of Public Health, in response to the continued spread of COVID-19, issued statewide orders to restrict indoor operations on many types of businesses, including restaurants, hair and nail salons, and other uses that really did create a sudden and significant financial hardship to our local business community. And in response to that, just 2 weeks later, on July 27th, the council authorized the city manager to take actions on a temporary basis upon requests from businesses, which included 3 primary actions. First, allowing temporary outdoor operations on private property, which occurred primarily in parking lots, and establishing a matching grant funding to allow the construction of permanent outdoor seating areas. Second, allowing temporary operations on public sidewalks, and finally approved the temporary closure of public streets and parking spaces for outdoor operations. Next slide. So the response from the business community was immediate, and the city issued about 22 temporary use permits allowing these outdoor operations. The majority, again, were for outdoor dining for restaurants, but also included several salons, 2 churches, and a card room. In addition, the city did install 2 parklets on West Grand Avenue in response to specific business owner requests. And the city also funded 1 permanent outdoor dining area through the matching grant program of up to $5,000. And that was the spoon trade, for anybody that might not know. Next slide. So as COVID restrictions continue to be scaled back, it's anticipated, anticipated the state will lift all restrictions by June 15th. Staff estimates there may be up to 10 businesses that may want to continue operating outdoors, and all these uses are restaurants with the exception of 1. These outdoor operations occur primarily in existing parking lots, with a few using public sidewalks, and of course the 2 parklets on West Grand Avenue. The use of outdoor dining is highly encouraged by our city land use element and our West Grand Avenue master plan. It creates really a more vibrant community. It boosts business exposure, especially along the West Grand Avenue corridor, which serves both our residents and tourists as the focal point of our community. So given the anticipated lifting of restrictions, staff is seeking council policy direction on three areas of potential support for continuing outdoor business operations. Next slide. So just starting with private property, the most common location for the outdoor operations is within these existing on-site parking lots with a few exceptions. And while some businesses like salons have already returned to indoor operations, there is a potential for businesses, again, especially restaurants, to want to continue to have these outdoor operations on a permanent basis. The permanent conversion of parking spaces to outdoor dining is allowed if businesses can comply with the minimum parking requirements. Based on recent code amendments over the last few years by the council, there was a reduction in on-site parking standards. So it may be feasible for businesses to convert parking spaces to outdoor seating and still meet the minimum parking standards. However, it really does vary for every property, and not every business may meet the minimum parking requirements. So if the council wanted to support the permanent conversion of parking spaces to outdoor seating area, a code amendment could be made to exempt a specific number of parking spaces if existing sites did not comply with those minimum parking requirements. And just to elaborate a little bit, you know, for restaurants on their own lot, the reduction to parking would not impact other businesses. However, a lot of our restaurants are in multi-tenant commercial centers, and the reduction in parking could be viewed negatively by other businesses and ultimately would require the property owner's approval to allow that parking reduction. Next slide. So staff's recommending that if the council supports the permanent installation of outdoor seating or operations, that those improvements be attractive when visible from public view. Examples of decorative improvements include decks, pavement treatments, barriers for separating seating areas from vehicle areas, as well as lighting. Though typically these costs are borne by the business, staff recognizes the cost to invest in these features can be a substantial investment for business. So staff is seeking council direction on whether to continue the matching grant program for outdoor seating improvements of up to $5,000 per business to help fund these improvements. Funding for these grants could come from the city's allocation of the one-time American Rescue Plan Act funds, or ARPA. Next slide. So here are some examples in the city of parking spaces used for outdoor seating. Next slide. And here's an example from another city. Again, conversion of parking spaces. You can see the cars parked in the background, but where you see the barrels and tables, again, were several parking spaces that were eliminated for parking. Next slide. So now on to public sidewalks. The development code currently does allow outdoor dining on public sidewalks in all zones along West Grand Avenue from Highway 1 to 14th Street and all the adjacent blocks to Grand Avenue. Grand Avenue has a 10-foot wide sidewalk. It provides adequate, in fact, very ample space for outdoor seating. Staff is not aware of any barriers caused by the existing ordinance, but is open to council input if there are any desired changes to further promote sidewalk dining. I can tell you that in 10 years prior to COVID, we never had a request for use of our public sidewalks. During COVID, we obviously had a few businesses use it, and we have at least one business that's interested in continuing that. So staff would again emphasize that if a business does want to invest in a permanent outdoor dining area on a public sidewalk, that decorative planters or other types of barriers should be installed to create an attractive environment. Next slide. So again, here's the example of one of our businesses that did some expansion onto the public sidewalk. And next slide. And just for comparison, you know, here are examples from other cities. And, you know, you can note on the right-hand slide, you know, really permanent offense, landscaping to really make the environment look more attractive. Next slide. So as you know, the city did install two parklets in response to business owner requests, both located on West Grand Avenue near 2nd and 10th Streets. Both of those business owners have expressed interest in the parklets remaining. Staff continues to be a big supporter of the temporary parklets, but we would like additional time to research the long-term or permanent conversion of public streets for outdoor operations. Next slide. And again, here are two parklets in our city. Next slide. And again, just for comparison purposes, here's an example in another city, a little more decorative with the fencing and landscaping, lighting, umbrellas, and so forth. Next slide. So staff is recommending the council allow the continued use of the two parklets or others if there were requests until the end of 2021. This could also include street closures, partial or full, such as on 2nd or 3rd Street. So the extension to the end of the year would allow staff to research the use of permanent parklets and discuss permanent use of the in the coastal zone with coastal staff for these parklets as well. So if council did support this, a resolution would be prepared for the next council meeting that would extend this temporary use that was previously approved at the end of the year. As alternatives, the council could have the parklets removed sooner or provide different direction. Again, business investment is in more decorative parklet features can be expensive, especially if only temporary for the rest of the year. Council could provide direction tonight to utilize city funding to assist in making these improvements to these temporary parklets. Next slide. So finally, in summary, the council response to allow temporary outdoor operations was very successful. It was key in allowing many of our businesses to continue to operate. And as these restrictions continue to be phased out, the council should consider potential for permanent outdoor operations, and therefore staff is seeking policy direction tonight on the permanent outdoor operations on private property, public sidewalks, and public streets. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckingham, for that presentation. So as we bring it back to the council, let's see if there's any questions that have come up. So we'll start with Councilmember Miller.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. I do have just a couple questions for Director Buckingham here. I think you noted with the grant program that it can be used for making the outdoor space more decorative and attractive. But I'm wondering if it's really unrestricted funds and it can be used for anything so long as it makes the space more attractive, or are there restrictions tied to that grant funding? Secondly, is it a reimbursement of $5,000, or can businesses request that $5,000 upfront in preparation for these upgrading plans? Then my third question is about ADA access on sidewalks. So if we have operations that encroach onto public walkways, does the city verify that it doesn't then restrict ADA access? Thank you.
Sure. So the goal of the matching grant program was to facilitate more investment in permanent outdoor seating. Again, we promote that and want that. So the grant funds were matching. If a business contributed up to $5,000, the city would also contribute up to $5,000. And I may have to defer to the city manager on the source of the original funds, but I think now the funding would come from the American Rescue Plan, and I believe that that is has flexibility to it. As far as the ADA accessibility, yes, all city sidewalks have to maintain 4 feet of access area, and during temporary COVID operations, we certainly did spot checks to make sure when that was really only an issue in the private, or excuse me, on the public sidewalks, but even on the private sidewalks, the same requirement exists. So we did spot checking. If someone was going to move towards a permanent installation of fixtures and so forth, we would require a plan, and we would make sure that those requirements were met at all times.
Thank you. And just a follow-up question. With the grant funds, you know, it could be a significant investment for our business owners. So are those funds, do they have to be spent and then reimbursed, or can they be requested in advance?
So I can probably jump in on this one, Councilmember Miller. Good evening, Mayor and Council. So just to add to what Mr. Buckingham mentioned, the grant funds are a totally local-derived program. So we created this program a year ago, and we can modify it however we see fit. It's really a local program to help support local businesses. As first originated a year ago, the funding source was from the Federal CARES Act, the original COVID relief bill that was approved in 2020. And the origin was really to keep it focused on helping businesses transition into a permanent outdoor space on private property. And so it was set up with a matching grant of up to $5,000. And to answer your question, Ms. Miller, it was on a reimbursement basis as originally conceived, so that businesses would be submitting invoices, receipts to the city, and then receiving up to $5,000 for a matching grant. I will say that, as Mr. Buckingham mentioned, we had only one business apply for the program and receive that grant, and I believe the improvement was more than $5,000, but $5,000 was what was the grant amount that we allocated for it. So what staff is suggesting now is a possibility of broadening the grant program, not just for permanent outdoor structures, but to help in decorative features and to help with other aspects to help support our business community, and to use the ARPA funding as our new funding source for this grant effort as we go forward. So that's what staff is requesting. As for the upfront versus reimbursement, we'll defer to the council on how you would want to apply for that. Our thought was the reimbursement had a chance for the business to actually put in its own investment, and the city would match that investment up to a certain amount so that there was a one-for-one match going forward.
Thank you for that response. I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, if I were a small business owner, it would be maybe very difficult for me to come up with $10,000 to buy a new set of outdoor dining tables, but I could probably come up with $5,000 knowing that the city would then provide the other half for my investment. But I see that there's challenges tied to that strategy as well.
Yeah, and it's really a policy call for the council, because this is intended to help support our business community in the continued recovery coming out of COVID-19. And I'll also just add that one driver a year ago was that the CARES Act was a relatively limited funding source. We received $135,000 in funding for the CARES Act. In contrast, the city is receiving $2.5 million in funding from the ARPA funds over a two-year time period. And as of now, we have not delineated the specific use of the ARPA funding. That's a discussion that we can have during our budget hearing coming up in a few weeks. But one of the criterion could be around business support, business assistance, business grants. So the council may want to think more broadly about supporting our businesses than we had a year ago under the CARES Act.
Very good. Any other questions, Councilmember Miller?
No further questions. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Roberts.
I just wanted to know, 10-foot sidewalks that we have in Grover, and the other examples that you showed us from the other cities, were they also 10-foot sidewalks, or do you know, Bruce?
I don't know, Councilmember Robert, but certainly providing or having the ability to have 6 feet, you can certainly provide, if not, you know, small tables for two people, you might even be able to provide four person tables. It really would depend on the configuration of the restaurant.
Right, and I know we're going to reconfigure that whole area down there, so that I'd probably all come up at that time. But I don't know if it's feasible to add another foot or two to the sidewalks or what. But I don't care for the parklets out in the streets, is what I don't care for. But other than that, for temporary use for the rest of the year, I would agree with it that it's okay. But it's a permanent structure out in the street where the parking spaces are. It's just something I don't care for. I think it intrudes on the traffic and the people. And sitting close, that close to moving cars is a little crazy. I know they've put some walls up and planter boxes and what have you to protect them. But other than that, that was it. No, it looks good. And I agree that we should be keeping those available for the business community till the end of the year. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So regarding the parklet, you know, I've spoken to the two parklet owners, and I think they would both like to continue them at the very least through the end of the year. I spoke to one, and given the opportunity, I know that he would love the opportunity to make it fancy, make it really nice, and make it a little bit more of his entire space, because it has actually definitely worked for him. So I would definitely like to revisit that in the future. You had mentioned the potential of street closures off of Grand Avenue near 2nd and 3rd. Has anybody actually reached out discussing that possibility, or is that a pie in the sky at this point?
We have not had any businesses reach out to us.
Okay.
It is something that has some potential, and with a synergy of enough restaurants, you know, you could create more of a closure and multiple or large outdoor seating area.
Okay, that's awesome.
And maybe, sorry, if I can just chime into that just for a moment, Councilmember Rushing, and Bruce is correct. We have not had a business reach out to us per se on that point. We reached out to a couple of businesses about that idea just to put it out there as a possibility. And that kind of goes to my statement of, I wouldn't necessarily term it as a pie in the sky, as more of a broader big picture thought around the utilization of public spaces to accomplish public goals. And I say that because there are a surprising number of communities, both around the area and broader across California, that have significantly repurposed public streets around not just dining, but also pedestrian, walkability, bicycle uses in ways that were seen as very big picture type of opportunities. So I guess, you know, just as the council thinks about this, it is a bigger conversation than the item before you this evening. It's really a future conversation. It may not be as pie in the sky as what could be envisioned. Is really about thinking about our public spaces and how they are best utilized for accomplishing public goals in creating an accessible community for all. So I just wanted to kind of put that comment out there of we can accomplish various things depending on where the council wants to go with future conversations around permanent uses.
Mr. Bronson, thank you on that. And I guess my last question is in regard to generally the matching funds with our parklets. If we chose to continue them through 2021, would we be able to use those matching funds to help our local restaurateurs make them look a little bit fancier?
Yes.
That's a beautiful thing. All right, then I am done. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So I love those simple answers. That's a great thing. So next we'll turn to Mayor Pro Tem Wright for any questions.
I really don't have any questions. I have some comments, but no questions. Thank you.
Very good. And I don't have any specific questions. I have comments as well. So let us turn to public comment and see if there's anyone on the line for public comment under this item. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn to our city clerk Sims and see if there's anyone on the line for public communication under this item.
We have Jocelyn Brennan on the line.
Very good. Good evening, Ms. Brennan. How are you tonight?
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, Jocelyn Brennan, South County Chambers, thank you for this discussion tonight of the outdoor dining and parklets, and for being so quick to respond to the businesses when they had to limit their indoor operations. We would be in complete support of allowing the businesses to continue to operate in either their private parking spaces or as parklets. And I know that the temporary look wouldn't be good long term. And I know that the businesses are, you know, struggling during the recovery. And so I know any matching grants that would be possible would help them to be able to make those permanent, and maybe even we would see more applications other than just the one for that program if it were available again. So we would be happy to reach out to any of the businesses or assist the city in any way. We do have a survey going out tomorrow to the business community and to the public, asking them if they're, you know, in support of continuing the outdoor dining, and also will they continue to use it, and asking the business owners as well what they estimate they will need as far as funding or what the costs are estimated to be to make something permanent and make it look a bit better. So we, of course, once we have a good response from the Gover Beach businesses, we will report back to you with that as well. And I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Always good to hear from you. Always good to hear the Chamber's perspective on that, as you are a definitely a valued business support partner in all of this. So by a show of unmuting, does anyone have any questions for Ms. Brennan? Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Thank you, Jocelyn. So I'm not sure if you mentioned this or not. I kind of spaced out there for a minute. I'm sorry. You said that you were going to do a survey. Did you say when you thought you might have those results?
It just depends on the response rate. Usually the biggest response is within the first 3 days. So we should have some, we're planning to send it out tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And so by the end of the week, we should have a good indication.
Terrific. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll be looking forward to that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that question. Let's see. I don't see anybody else unmuting, so I will say thank you to Ms. Brennan. So, and go ahead and stick around just in case we have any specific questions as we get to our comment phase, if you don't mind. But I'll turn it back to our city clerk and see if there's any other members of the public that are on the line for this item.
No, we have no one else on the line. No, we have no one else on the line.
Oh, very good. Thank you for that. Sorry about the delay on my response there. So I will go ahead and close public comment on this item, bring it back to the council for comments. So let's start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Well, thank you. I support expanding the temporary outdoor space staff report suggests, and as well as I support continuing matching grants. I love the concept of the outdoor dining and so on. So I guess those are really my comments. Yeah, I think that's all I have to say.
Okay, very good. Just for as we get into further discussion, I've started to capture people's support items. So let's. So you're supportive of both continuing use of private parking lots as well as parklets and public sidewalks, or is there any concerns you have with one or more of those?
Yes. The only concern I had about the public sidewalks, I had discussed earlier with Matt, and that was. In regard to the development standards, but I guess we can get around that somehow. where the sidewalk seating is not allowed within 15 feet of the corner. But I guess that has to do with sight lines and so on. So apparently, as long as that's not an issue, I have no problem with that at all. So, yes.
Very good. Then going to the use of matching grants. So are you supportive of reimbursements or city advanced or one or both?
I'm supportive of both of those things, as long as it's done in a intelligent, supportable way. Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you for that feedback. Let's turn next to Councilmember Miller for comments.
Thank you.
Actually, you may have actually incorporated some of your comments previously.
Yeah, I did. Sorry about that.
No worries.
But the expansion of businesses into outdoor space has allowed our businesses to continue operations during the COVID-19 restrictions. So if businesses anticipate they will continue outdoor operations and the spaces can be made to be more attractive from a public view, I have no objection to them continuing on private property. I am also in support of continuing the matching grant program for business investments up to $5,000 for upgrading their outdoor areas, either reimbursement or advance. I'm okay with both. And then with the expansion into public sidewalks and parking spaces, that's a bit more challenging for me. I think I'm in agreement with Council Member Robert. it's been a tough night for me for some reason, but that I think there is some barriers there that we have to consider. That's making sure that we don't impede flow of traffic for those who are in wheelchairs. And additionally, with the street parking with parklets, we are taking away potentially permanently parking spaces in front of businesses. And just I think I'd like to know more about impact before I can support that option. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Next we'll go to Councilmember Roberts.
I agree with Mayor Pro Tem Bright and Councilmember Miller. But I am totally against the parklets in this street. I do not like that idea. I like the idea if it was their private parking lots that they had, Station Grill has a pretty large parking lot in the back that they have plenty of room to put a parklet there in their parking spaces, as long as it's attractive, as stated by the other council members. So, and the grant funds, I'm totally in agreement with that also. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Rushing.
All right, thank you. I'll start with the matching grants. I'm definitely in favor of continuing those, be it upfront or in a reimbursement fashion. Regarding private parking lots, obviously, as long as we continue to maintain the parking requirements for those businesses, I have no problem with that. I think they've done a lot of great things moving forward. I would love to see something that encourages our businesses to make them more attractive moving forward, so that they are a little bit more on a permanent fashion and not just a tent, possibly. That's not necessarily the best look for our city, I think. I know we all had to do everything that we had to do, but if we're going to keep going with this, I think we should spread out and do it right. Regarding the parklets, I am personally very concerned about the amount of traffic that's on Grand Avenue and the amount of traffic that goes through there. I know that the two businesses that are there are currently enjoying them and using them, and I definitely would support them continuing throughout the end of the year at the very least. If they were to continue, I would expect them to be significantly more fortified, and hopefully there would be a lot more involved there. I know personally I've sat at least one of those locations and felt a little bit nervous as a large vehicle buzzed by me as I was trying to enjoy my sandwich. And then regarding the sidewalks, literally it's just so long as as the code is enforced, I have no issues with that as well. Cities all across the United States have successfully have sidewalk dining. Actually, throughout the entire world, there's sidewalk dining. Where in the world can you not go get a cup of coffee and sit on a walk? So I would definitely consider that to be a good position to move forward with. And Mayor Lee, I think I covered all of our points. Am I correct?
Yes, I think I've captured that. Yes, you did cover all the points. We'll see if there's anything else that anyone wants to add to the discussion as well. So thank you, everyone, for those comments. I'll go ahead and add mine in the fact that I am actually supportive of use of private parking areas as long as folks can, A, get the owner's approval, and B, can maintain their parking standards. So I think that was the situation with Station Grill in the fact that their use of the sidewalk as well as their parklet was such opportunistic endeavor because the owner of that shopping center would not allow them to expand into the back parking lot, so which is unfortunate in that situation. And I think Ms. Brennan has reached out, as the city has reached out to the property owner there in an effort to try and change his mind, but to no success yet. So I am actually in favor of both the private parking lot use, the parking lot use, as well as parklets. Parklets, I do have a feeling that we do need to make sure that they're safe. And I think the situation of attractiveness and permanency ends up providing that safety. I know in the two locations that they currently are, it does provide for opportunities for slower speeds in those areas. And I think that is something that if we do continue that, we would want to make sure that safety is encouraged. With respect to the matching grants, I'm in support of either a matching grant or an advanced grant. I think from the city perspective, we would need to put some controls is probably the wrong term, but assurances that the funding would be utilized. I don't want to have the city be put in a position to where we advance funds that for, let's say, lumber or materials that then don't get utilized for a extended period of time. So I think that's where the matching grant is much more in keeping with what cities have done in the past, but I'm definitely willing to entertain some thoughts from staff as to how to implement a advanced grant standpoint that do have some a little bit of controls on it. And I think that covers the three items. I will go ahead and add some of the conversation or add to the conversation about closure of street right away for whether it be 2nd Street, 3rd Street, or possibly 9th Street. I know prior councils have had conversations about use of public streets similar to the classic example in San Luis Obispo is Mission Street in front of, or Monterey Street in front of the Mission, which turned from a public thoroughfare into a public park kind of atmosphere of availability for public space. And I think that was what prior councils have talked about around Ramona Garden Park and being able to do some street closures and actually use of that by either vendors or events. And I think the 2nd and 3rd Street opportunities present opportunities for that as well. So I think if there's a consensus among the council, I think that's an opportunity that Mr. Bronson had mentioned would need more study. And so if there's consensus by kind of a show of thumbs, if we want to go ahead and bring forward that discussion at a future time, whether that's as part of the budget discussions or part of zoning updates or something as a standalone item in the future. So anybody have any concerns upon that? Go ahead and do a quick thumbs up consensus on that. Okay. So Mr. Bronson, anything else you need on 2nd, 3rd, or use of public rights of way, notwithstanding our ability to have Mr. Hale squirm on that item? But
No, sir, Mr. Mayor, council members, we certainly will work on that research. I think that is in line with the earlier discussion around looking at different uses. It doesn't lock us into any course of action, but it opened up a broad discussion about how we utilize public spaces to best serve the community. And I think there's a lot of research being done, other communities that are looking at this very topic as well. And so I think there's information we can bring back to the council later this year as we consider this and look at what the possibilities are and what the benefits could be for our community.
Very good. Definitely appreciate that. So, okay. So from that perspective, we did kind of have a good round of discussion on the use of parklets. And it sounded like there was kind of differing levels of support for either the existing parklets or continued use of those. So from a council perspective, is there consensus to extend the program through June of 2022 as a means for staff to either continue researching how to make it safer or how to transition from its existing use during the pandemic, hopefully wind down from there. So is there, okay, so I see Councilmember Roberts. So it sounds like, Mr. City Manager, we have consensus to continue the parklet program through June of 2022. And but it sounds like there's also opportunities for discussion as to how to make them more attractive and how to make them more, making sure that they're safe.
Let me interject, kind of
a general question. Certainly, Mr. Hale.
Yeah, let me talk with the city manager in the context of that most recent policy direction. I think I'd like to put something together in terms of some findings that we could make to go forward with that temporary continuance. We did make findings, if you remember, back when we originally adopted this. But I think there were some limitations that were put into that, those findings at the time. I'd like to expand those so that it would apply to this policy extension.
Yes, and what Mr. Hale and I will work on are the findings as part of a resolution that we'll bring back to the council at an upcoming meeting for adoption to formalize that temporary continuance to June 2022 while having the necessary legal findings to help back that up.
Okay. Very good. Any members of the council have any concern with that approach or any questions on that approach? Very good. Seeing all affirmative no's towards that. So let's see. Was there anything else with respect to talk about sidewalks or just use of sidewalks? The concern that I heard from council members was through access, either accessible access or use of the public space. Is there a concern by councils to add in the use of the public spaces for outdoor eating if there is assurances by planning staff and by administrative staff to that there is appropriate accessible protocols or accessible paths and no obstructions, or is there a different conversation we need to have on that? So go ahead and unmute yourself if you have any concerns about extending or having a further discussion about the use of that as long as the appropriate safety protocols are in place. I see Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. So my concern is not only the safety aspects, but also permanently losing parking spaces on Grand. And right now it sounds like there's only one business located on Grand, but I'm kind of thinking ahead and into the future, if we have more businesses interested and we decide to allow those businesses to put up parklets as well, are we then permanently losing more than one space, and how does that affect downtown? And maybe a bigger discussion.
Gotcha. And actually, that would be the discussion for the resolution that would come back to us for the use of the parklets through June of 2022. So I think the discussion I was anticipating here was the use of like sidewalk space. So I just want to make sure I wasn't clear.
Gotcha.
On that separation.
Sidewalk space is fine as long as access is verified.
Okay, gotcha. Because we will have another discussion on the parklets. Is that correct, City Manager?
We would. I think staff's intention would be that the resolution through June 2022 could be done in a rather simplistic manner, maybe even on consent, because it really is about continuing a temporary use. I think the broader conversation that the council is talking about regarding permanent use would be a conversation we bring back to you later in the fiscal year, end of this year, early next year, where we'd be able to get into Ms. Miller's comments and other comments regarding whether this would be a permanent use. But for now, we would continue the temporary use until next June.
Okay. Any concerns by that, Councilmember Miller?
No, thank you.
Okay. Very good. And Councilmember Rushing, I saw that you had unmuted yourself. Did was your question answered, or did you have more to add?
I did. It was literally just a reaffirmation that the way that we have everything set up regarding the sidewalks at this point, essentially, as long as we're following code, access is going to be guaranteed throughout the process. So I don't see that there should be a problem.
Very good. Not seeing anyone else unmute. I think we are good on those talking points. City Manager or Mr. Buckingham, anything else we need to add on this item before I have one more question for you? So Mr. Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just the one area I'd like to confirm with the council is the use of the grant funding, which right now it has been limited to conversion to permanent outdoor structures. I'm hearing broader interest from the council in expanding the use of these grant funds to cover decorative work as part of sidewalk seating expansion, as part of the continued temporary use of parklet spaces. So I want to make sure I'm hearing that correctly from the council in broadening the use of the grant funds. With regards to reimbursement or advancement, I think, Mayor, you summarized this well earlier. The reimbursement does provide some degree of mutual investment by both the business and the city, similar to constructing other facilities. We did advance funds for the microgrant program, as the council recalls. We advanced those funds very quickly. Those had a very broad use to really cover any kind of business expense, from rent to personnel to utilities to, in some cases, outdoor use that some businesses used. So we do have a history of that as well. If the council wanted to go down the road of advancement, we would suggest some very clear guidance with regards to submittal of receipts, invoices, and the ability, if we have to go there, of clawing back funds if there are no invoices or receipts submitted. Not that we would expect that, but just to be able to protect the city treasury, making sure that we have those provisions in place so that we had documented information that the funds were used for the construction of different features as identified by the council.
Very good. Thank you for that explanation. I see Councilmember Rushing's hand has raised.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. I would definitely support, in regards to this, I would prefer reimbursement just because of how everything is going to work in this process, and I would definitely support expanding it toward the beautification of these projects as well.
Anyone else have concerns or comments that they want to have on that? Just go ahead and unmute yourself, Councilmember Roberts.
I would agree with Councilmember Rushing. I like the reimbursement idea. That way we know the funds are going to be or have been used for that purpose. So that's a good idea. Thank you.
Very good. So any other, Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I agree with my colleagues. My only concern there is that, you know, everything is just so tight right now. I would hate to just limit it to reimbursement, particularly with the businesses that, you know, we've been dealing with for years and years. But I will concede to whatever my colleagues, whatever the majority decides. But I would hate to deny some of our businesses the opportunity to beautify, or the opportunity to to be able to do something with their business, for them not to be able to take advantage of one of these grants because they don't have an extra $5,000 laying around, and then waiting for us to reimburse them. So I just kind of want to put that out there. So there you have it. Thank you.
Very well stated. And I see Councilmember Miller has her hand raised.
Thank you. You know, I mentioned this earlier, but it really is, as Mayor Pro Tem Bright mentioned, it's a really difficult time financially for a lot of households and business owners. And so I think if we choose the route of reimbursement, I think there's an onus on us to say, okay, if you submit your receipts, you'll get reimbursed within so many days. So people know what to expect and how quickly turnaround time will be for them to get that $5,000 back that they may have had borrowed money from friends or neighbors or whoever to scrape together to get these upgrades done to their outdoor space. Thank you.
Very good. Maybe I can summarize kind of the feeling that I'm getting from the council is that we're definitely supportive of the program. And I think the sense that I'm getting is that perhaps the preferred method is the reimbursement. But we, I think we're all in support of when possibilities arise or when they come where a advancement might be more appropriate or applicable based upon what's happening. I think we can leave it to city staff to kind of work through that process. I don't want to put in, perhaps this is something that we coordinate with the chamber as well, but I think if I'm hearing correctly, we're generally supportive of either option. Obviously, the most control for the city is the reimbursement, but we don't want to limit folks if that is the only option would be to advance the funds. So is that adequate direction, Mr. Bronson?
I believe it is. We can make whatever the council directs work in helping to push out funds. Again, with the COVID relief funding, the micro grant, our goal was to push out funds as quickly as possible. And to the time frame, we had checks go out in a matter of a week after the applications came in. So we definitely will be able to turn around check processing very quickly, given our small, nimble, efficient operation here. And I think we could work with businesses to perhaps start off with a reimbursement approach, and then on a case-by-case basis, if that was a hardship, we could certainly work with the business to be able to advance some degree of funding, maybe a 50-50, or if not the whole thing, on a case-by-case basis. We're not a large bureaucracy. We can work quickly and nimbly with our business community to help them get to where we all want them to go. We all want to go, and that's a more decorative landscape that is more successful for businesses in the end.
Very good. So I think that's good direction, or I'm seeing consensus with thumbs by the council. So to give staff the flexibility to work with the business owners on something that works for the mutual benefit of both parties. So very good. So I did provide just a little bit of a question to the city manager on one of the attachments, and he had indicated that he could work internally. There was, as part of the outdoor use, there is in one of the attachments, and I forget, it's attachment number one, I forget which item it is, but there was a prohibition, or maybe not a prohibition, against utilizing or maintain or keeping furniture outdoors. It had to go in inside each day and night. So I did ask the city manager if that was something that we could change possibly in a future zoning update for consideration. So unless there's any concerns by the council on that, we'll let Mr. Buckingham work forward on that on a future update to our zoning amendment. So with that, not seeing anybody's microphone come off, so we'll provide that as direction as well. So Mr. Bronson, Mr. Buckingham, anything else you need from us on this item?
No, Mr. Mayor, I believe we have received the necessary direction we were looking for. Thank you to Mr. Buckingham for his great work and his department's great work on shepherding this over the last year, having 22 temporary use permits that were issued in a matter of days really showed responsiveness to our business community and was one piece of the puzzle to help us all keep going over the last year. And now we're looking at the recovery, we're looking at the transition, and we believe the council direction will be a key ingredient for helping us move in that way. So thank you to the council. We will go forward and implement the direction and bring back the resolution on the continued temporary use of the parklets for the next year and get our grant program off the ground and really help make that successful and work with the chamber on ways to do that.
Very good. Very good. Thank you for that. So we will conclude work on item number 13, which takes us to item number 14. So I'll invite folks to call in under this item, which is the street sweeping update and provide policy direction. If you do have public comments, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, for the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, and good evening, City Council. Wendy, if I can have you bring up the PowerPoint presentation, I'll just go ahead and begin. So what we're talking about tonight is one of the most basic services the city provides, and that's street sweeping. I think every community provides some level of street sweeping. Certainly, it's a way of keeping your streets looking nice and, you know, enhancing and beautifying your community. In 2020, the council provided a direction for us to bring back an item or bring an item to them on street sweeping and that program, a current program and opportunities for changes. We have a contract with a company called Venco, which we entered into in 2018. That contract expires in August of 2021, so it's coming up pretty soon. And we do have, though, in the contract that we can offer 1-year time extensions, up to 3 total. So the current program, I'll mention that I didn't put this in the written staff report, but I will mention that, you know, the current street sweeping program was developed, or I should say it was scaled back to what we currently have in a time when the city was having some financial difficulties. That doesn't appear to be the case today. We're the city looking pretty good financially, as evidenced by the proposed budget coming up. So this is a scaled back street sweeping program, to be fair. And with that, residential streets were scaled back to 4 times per year, quarterly, basically, with arterials and collectors being swept weekly. And then what we call currently is called the West Grand Avenue Corridor. And this is a very old item. I think it's been in place since the 80s, probably. Basically, the West Grand Avenue Corridor, which includes West Grand Avenue, Ramona, and Rockaway Avenues, are swept twice per week. The current cost is $51,000 per year. Next slide, please. The issues really that are before you and the issues that we hear about from our residents are about the effectiveness of street sweeping. We do know that the street sweeper in some instances leaves sand and dirt behind. You can see evidence of that where they turn and go around cars and things like that. There'll be, you know, little piles of dirt and stuff. This mostly occurs on residential streets and in particular streets that are in poor condition. As we all know, and as you heard earlier in Matt's update on all the activities we're going through, streets are getting to be in better condition. So a lot of that hopefully is going to go away. We also have issues, the unique issues in our city are migration of sand on the streets that are near the beach, which is primarily Front Street and South 4th Street, even to some extent, as you get down further south by the railroad tracks. And then the issues with our stand of eucalyptus trees that, again, is primarily on Front Street and South 4th Street. There's a lot of leaves and debris. And then one kind of unique issue on Front Street, kind of North Front Street, if you will, a recent establishment of a cormorant rookery, which has been kind of an interesting challenge. So those are the issues. Improved effectiveness. What could we do? Well, you know, we've talked to Venco. You know, certainly they could drive slower. They could dump the street sweeping equipment more often. But basically, the speed that they drive is acceptable from the manufacturer of the equipment, and they dump as often as needed, pretty much. And they, if they did it more, their prices would have to change. And I don't think with quarterly sweeping on residential streets in particular, you'd really see much benefit from that. We did look at a number of options, and we asked Venco to give us some prices. Option one is to increase residential street sweeping to monthly, so from quarterly to monthly. That comes at about a $20,000 cost increase per year, but it's not totally related to residential street sweeping, but because we now need to add in the train station parking lot, which we're now doing occasionally on special sweeps. Next slide, please. We also asked for a second alternative, which was to increase the frequency of arterials and collectors to twice weekly, and then to actually hit residential streets twice per month, so 24 times per year. That increases the cost by $65,000, so pretty big jump there, really doubling the cost of the program as it stands today. We do have a provision in the contract for what are called special sweeps. We've used that in the past to address primarily the eucalyptus issues, leaves and debris on South 4th Street, clogging the bike lane, making it less than desirable to ride down there, also on Calvin Court, and to some extent, again, on Front Street, as well as on West Grand on the west side of Highway 1, where we have the majority of our sand migration issues. Approximately 200, back one slide, please. Thank you. The special sweeps are about $275 a block. That's, you know, it changes depending on how many blocks we have them do. But if you just did one block, it'd be about $275. And again, that could be used to address excess sand, leaves, and tree-related issues if we just kind of wanted to spot fix the program. Next slide, please. Thank you, Wendy. That looks like the previous slide. Next slide there, Wendy. Still the same slide there. One more forward. Ah, there we go. No, still one more slide. Nope. Seem to be bouncing back and forth. There we go. Nope, that's way back. Not sure what's happening here. There we go. Thank you, Wendy. We got it. So the other issue that we often hear about from our residents is the issue of dust and noise. I think it would be helpful to kind of explain how these machines work. Street sweeping changed. I don't know the exact era, but I'm going to say somewhere around the 80s or early 90s, street sweeping changed from a machine that actually swept. I mean, it actually had these big brushes that would sweep the street up into a catch, kind of a catch container. And those were basically outlawed. You really can only use them for construction and for maybe sweeping parking lots. They were outlawed because of air quality issues. They just sent dust and debris everywhere. And so they came up with the new and improved version, which now is basically like a vacuum cleaner. If you picture, kind of it forms a seal on the ground, and then this jet of high-speed air is used to dislodge particles from the street. They become airborne underneath the machine. Hopefully they don't come out. And the machine vacuums them up and filters the air and spits out clean air. The brushes you see are really just to sweep debris underneath the machine. They don't sweep the street per se. So dust and noise. Why are we seeing dust when the street sweeper goes by? Well, in most cases, that's really related to. I'm kind of going out of order here. I apologize, but that's mostly related to the street sweeper not sealing down to the street because of the condition of the street. So noise, the only noise complaints we really get are because the sweeper is out very, very late at night. We basically start around midnight on the twice a week sweeping on the West Grand Avenue corridor. And as you know, we have some residential properties, quite a few actually, on Ramona and Rockaway. So, you know, people hear the machine coming through and they complain. That is done primarily to reduce traffic impacts and improve sweeping effectiveness. With all the traffic you have and all the cars parked on your commercial corridor during the daytime, it's almost not worth trying to sweep during the daytime. So as I mentioned earlier, the dust cloud is generated by the sweeper primarily due to the street condition, and again, because of infrequent street sweeping, that would be your quarterly sweeping of your residential streets. And again, street improvements, I believe, will reduce a lot of those dust complaints, along with additional frequency, because there'll be less to pick up. Next slide, please. There we go. The final thing that we hear from time to time is about why don't we have parking prohibitions? You know, a number of residents have suggested that we should have no on-street parking on sweeping days. Our current program is basically voluntary. We publish on our website. We tell people, you know, when we're going to be there to sweep. We encourage you to remove your car and park it in your driveway or your parking lot or whatever applies to you. And certainly, if the car's not there, the street sweeper can go close to the curb, doesn't have to make so many turns. It does improve the effectiveness. However, enforcing no parking on half of the city at a time on particular days would be a very significant undertaking. And so I don't think it's currently feasible. I've talked to the city manager, I've talked to the chief of police. Given our current police staffing levels, it's not feasible to enforce a parking program for half of the city at a time. There would be undetermined general fund cost impacts to try to improve that no parking enforcement program. I imagine an additional officer would be required. And I would note that none of our neighboring cities have enforced parking restrictions on sweeping days. Next slide, please. So fiscal impact, you know, we've talked about a lot of things. So primarily fiscal impacts would be related to the options that I provided. Option one, again, was to increase residential street sweeping to every month, and that comes at a cost of roughly $20,000 a year. Now, we haven't negotiated these contract changes with VINCO, but we certainly would. So these are approximations. But so option one, $20,000 a year, you get 12 sweeps on your residential streets per year. Option two increases that twofold, twice monthly sweeping on residential streets. Whew, that's a mouthful. And arterials and collectors go to twice weekly, and that cost increases roughly double your current. We were about $51,000 now. It's $65,000 more, so more than double. Staff is seeking council direction on potential changes to the sweeping program. We could implement council's direction if it involved a cost change. We could implement that as part of the fiscal year 21-22 budget process, or we could even incorporate a cost as a mid-year adjustment in fiscal year 21-22. So next slide, please. So now we're basically, I'm done with my presentation. I have some information here if council wants to look at it. I'll turn it back to you, Mayor Lee. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ray, for that presentation. Let's see if it has generated questions by council members. As bringing the council members back up, I will invite folks to call in under this item at 805-321-6639. And I'll start with, Council Member Miller. Again, on this one, any questions on street sweeping?
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Council Member Roberts.
Yes, so try to understand the math. So if we increase it to once a month, it's $20,000 additional. So it's not one of these, the more you buy, the less it costs. Because if we increase it twice a month, it goes up three or four times the cost. Is that correct?
Not entirely. So The first option at roughly a $20,000 cost increase was just to increase the frequency on residential streets. The second option does that, doubles that, but also increases the frequency on your arterials and collectors.
Okay, miss that.
Yeah, and okay. Both include adding the train station as a regular sweep instead of our special sweeps that we're doing now.
Got that. What if we were to increase the just the residentials to twice a month instead of just once?
That's your $20,000 increase.
Okay. Is this twice a month?
I'm sorry. That's once a month. And I don't know the answer to just residential twice a month.
That might double.
I mean, it would probably be 30,000 or somewhere, okay. You know, 35,000. I'm kind of guessing. I'm not even trying to do the math here, but, you know, something like 35,000.
Okay. Thank you. That was all.
So just for clarification question on that, so option one goes from once a quarter to once a month, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, just confirming. So very good. Council Member Rushing, any questions?
Actually, sort of a background question. At one point you'd mentioned that the city backed off on street sweeping several years back. I was just curious how long ago it was that that we changed to our current timing, and do you know actually how long ago it was that we changed?
It was about the time I started with the city.
Fantastic. I'm talking to the right person. That's
yeah. Awesome. So about the time I started with the city, you know, there was some kind of dramatic things going on. We had some significant budget issues. You know, there were some layoffs, unfortunately, not many. We were able to manage most of that through attrition. A couple golden handshakes, but you know, we looked at every program in public works, and we actually did some pretty massive budget cuts in our operations and maintenance programs just to try to, you know, get closer to balancing the budget. The street sweeping program was certainly part of it, and I think my best recollection, this is a long time ago, but my best recollection is we were sweeping residential streets once a month at the time.
Okay.
So that's 10 years ago. Just, I'm sorry, I don't know if I mentioned the date, but about 10 years ago, about 2010.
All right, thank you. That's my only question.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Wright.
Thank you. I don't have any questions at this time.
Very good. And so my question, I think, can be saved for comments, actually. So I'll go ahead and see from our city clerk if there is anyone on the line for public comments, and as she's bringing up our callers, I'll invite folks to call in again at 805-321-6639. And Madam City Clerk, anyone on the line for public comments?
Yes, we have Jim Jaffe.
Good evening, Mr. Jaffe.
Hello, Mayor and Council. Hello, Mayor and Council. With respect to street sweeping, I have noticed in my neighborhood right off the pike that, and I did not personally see this, but right after one street sweeping, the street was pretty well, surface of it was torn up. You could tell by where the street sweeper went down the street and went around parked cars, there were still gouges in the street that you could still see. The second occasion, there's gouges up to a half inch deep in front of my house from days after the street sweeper went through. I can't imagine what else is making those gouges. With that in mind, I would like to suggest maybe that if the vendor is required to pay a bond, maybe that bond needs to be reviewed with respect to mitigating any damages, especially since our streets are now being rehabilitated. I think that's very important. And also, it's my understanding that the street sweepers are required by another state agency to actually perform that duty, if I'm not correct. So that's all I have. I just think something needs to monitor those street sweepers to see if they don't tear the streets up. That's all I have.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jaffe, for those comments. So we'll capture all of those and see if there's any response from city staff after we receive any other additional public comments.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council. And first, we'll go to staff and see if Mr. Jaffe's comments have, if you can provide a response to that, which appears to be some potential damage being caused by the street sweeping, and if there's a bond for these damages, and if there is that damage, if it is the result of the street sweeping, do we ask them to perform the repairs?
I'd be happy to answer that. So first of all, although I was aware of this concern just before the council meeting, other than that, it's the first I've really heard much of a street sweeper damaging the street. I am aware that, you know, especially 8 or 9 years ago, when the street sweeper would go through, the brushes that move the material underneath the sweeper would often dislodge little chunks of pavement that were, you know, basically just sitting there floating around. The pavement was so alligatored and so completely dried out that it would just sort of, I don't know, you picture kind of a bunch of rocks sitting there and it would kind of sweep up some of those rocks. But to the issue of creating ruts or some kind of actual, you know, indentation in the pavement, there's not much on a street sweeper that actually touches the street other than those brushes. So we'll take a look at it as far as maybe it's an operator error issue somehow. Maybe he's putting too much pressure down on the brushes and part of the actual machine is touching. I don't know. There shouldn't be anything that does that. And with regard to a bond, I, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know. I can say that most of the city contracts for services I wrote, or I was involved in writing them, and generally they do include a bond, as well as insurance provisions and provisions against damaging public property. So it's probably there, or there's probably provisions in the contract that would allow us to recoup any losses that would be related to that sweeping operation. But we'll definitely take a look at that. I'm curious to find out more about potential rutting being created by the street sweeper.
I appreciate the opportunity that staff has to take a look at that as maybe do kind of a another round of inspections as they come through, just to make sure that the operators have appropriate training from Venco in order to maintain our streets, since we have been doing a significant investment in our streets, which as you mentioned was, I think, one of the reasons why we potentially why we reduced the frequency of sweeping, because the streets were in such bad shape that it was picking up much more than just dirt. So let's turn to Councilmember Rushing first for any comments on this item.
In terms of comments, I definitely know that our residential streets need a little bit more love at this point, especially with our beautiful new streets across the board.
Sure that I'm in support of a twice monthly. And did I lose you all?
Nope. Okay, I can still hear you.
If you can, I can't hear you, but I'll get back there in a second. Twice monthly seems a little bit excessive at this point. I would really like to see the change that option one makes going forward. I think an additional $20,000 a year is a good price to pay for maintaining our streets and keeping things as orderly as possible. So that's all I've got. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Roberts.
I agree with Councilmember Rushing, and I am concerned about the street sweepers destroying the streets, but I think that's probably because the streets were destroyed. I don't think that he should actually destroy streets, and they're just picking up pieces that are loose, as Mr. Ray says. I think, and the general public might not be aware, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we were required to clean those storm drains by the state. It is a law that we have to do it, so a lot of people comment, why do we even pay to do it? But we're required to do so, and hopefully increasing it to the monthly $20,000 option one, we'll see some better results, and people will be happier. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Very good. Next up, Councilmember Miller. Any comments?
Thank you. I do think that a good solution is to increase the frequency of the street sweeping in residential areas from quarterly to monthly. I think it's the $20,000 is pretty minimal of an increase, and
My thinking is it's going to resolve a lot of our complaints about dust and debris in the streets. Then I had another comment, but I think that's it for now. And if I think of it, I'll send my question later. Thank you.
Sounds good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, I am really happy to be able to support proposal number one, and that we're in a position to be able to do that, not in the position that we were in 10 years ago, where we had to reduce our services. So I am happy to support proposal number one. Unfortunately, I've never lived on a street where the pavement was in such a condition that sweeping that street made it look any better. So, anywho, I'm hoping that one of these days it'll be different. So, Councilmember Robert, you're correct. As I understand it, our stormwater permit requires us to sweep the streets. So no matter whether it makes the dust fly or the asphalt fly, we have to do that. So, and oftentimes, you know, our residents don't understand that. So anyway, was there another thing I was going to say about that? No, I guess I will follow along the lines of Councilmember Miller. If I can remember it, I'll let you know.
Very good. Okay, very good. So I am going to be supportive of option one as well. So, but before I make further comments, I did want to give Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, an opportunity to kind of expand upon the inference of our stormwater permit and our MS4 permits. So for the general public education.
I'm happy to do so. There actually is a kind of a clarification there, but it's almost irrelevant. So essentially our stormwater permit, we have a permit from the Regional Water Quality Control Board that allows us to operate a storm drain system, primarily because it discharges either to Meadow Creek or the ocean. The permit requires us to reduce pollutant loading from our streets. It doesn't specifically require street sweeping. I just don't know how else you'd reduce pollutant loading from the streets. So it, you know, like I said, it's kind of an irrelevant distinction, but essentially we have to reduce pollutant loading. The only way we can think of is to, you know, sweep the streets, although we do have some filters in a number of our storm drains, but they primarily filter out larger stuff that just comes in from storms. So, you know, it's, I guess you could say it's a requirement because of that. Otherwise, it's really kind of the secondary benefit, because I mentioned when I opened that, you know, the real issue is just a nice looking community. If you don't If you don't sweep the streets, you know, things don't look that great on your street. So.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that explanation. So looks like we have consensus, unanimous consensus on option number one. So let me add a couple of wrinkles to that just to kind of provide additional direction to staff, hopefully. So one of the questions was the timing for the start of this option one. And from my perspective, I don't think we need to start it on a particular day. I think we just allow staff to move forward with discussions with Venco, and whenever the appropriate timing of the contract coming back, whether it be a mid-year or an appropriately timed council meeting for that to occur. Any concerns on other members of staff to on just a non-specific time frame within the next 6 months, so to speak? So, Mr. Bronson, I see your microphone has been unmuted.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think that would be a fine direction for us. Just to confirm that the likely scenario is that we'd be negotiating a one-year extension with Benco, which would not be a council action item. It would just be an extension of the current contract approved by council back in 2018, and then the cost would be incorporated into the mid-year adjustments brought to the council in fiscal year 2022. So we would not have a separate council item coming before you. We would incorporate that direction as part of our operations.
Very good. I think by seeing mostly shaking heads, I think we are all in consensus of that. Okay, so of that approach. Next wrinkle is the timing for our what I call our Route 1, our major arterial Grand Avenue streets. I know right now it's currently 12 to 4 a.m., I think it is. I'd love to give staff the opportunity to see if it's more noise efficient, for lack of a better term, to start that at potentially either at 11 p.m. or 10 p.m., depending upon when the streets do end up have a clearance of most vehicles. So I think I'd like to provide the ability for staff to change that timing in the one-year extension that they're going to have the discussion, unless there's any concerns by council members. Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, I did see your microphone come off. Or off mute, so did you think of your other question?
No, I just wanted to comment on that. You know, oftentimes when I am coming home, like from a meeting or something, even at 9 o'clock, there's nobody on the road. So oftentimes I think that 10 o'clock is probably an acceptable time. They're really in our little town, I mean, it just seems like there's just nobody out. So it might not be a bad idea to take a look at an earlier time rather than midnight, or that's just my opinion. That's what mm-hmm. I have anyway.
I appreciate the feedback. Let's turn to Councilmember Rushing for his comments on that.
Thank you, sir. Just kind of a sideline on this. So one of the problems that I know that my family's always had is, and I know that it's always been posted, it's once a quarter, and we know that you can just check the website to find out when the street sweeper is going to come through, but 9 times out of 10, we forget. And once we move into a monthly kind of a service, I would really love the city to be engaged in an active role, making sure that people actually know. I know that we can't enforce anything, but I think an active process in which we are letting people know this is the day that your street is going to be swept. Feel free to move your car or feel free not to, but it sure would be nice for your property if your car was not there when the street sweeper came through. I would really love to see that happen.
Sounds like a wonderful opportunity for some social media posts. Okay, so it looks like we've got a consensus for that approach. So I think the last item I have is, or maybe two other quick items, was the major Route 1 included Rockaway and Ramona. And I think that was a kind of an identification of the downtown business core from years ago. Is there any concerns by staff of potentially considering taking those two streets out of the Grand Avenue sweep and just doing Grand Avenue? Because since that's where most of the complaints come from a timing standpoint, or what would you see as a benefit there? So, Mr. Ray.
That's an interesting thought. You know, most of the residential properties, with the exception of some mixed use properties on Grand, those residential properties are on Rockaway and Ramona Avenues. That program, the decision to include Rockaway and Ramona, I've been around a while now, but that definitely predates me. I don't know the reason for it. I think maybe that was just the thought of that. That's your sort of main corridor at one point. I really don't know. So, I have no heartburn over that idea. I think it sounds pretty good.
What's the consensus of the council? By a thumbs up, give staff the authority to kind of negotiate whether that stays in or out. Looks like I'm seeing enough thumbs to be a mutual consensus or a unanimous consensus. So then one more item. And during Mr. Ray's presentation, there was a discussion about, we'll call it eucalyptus droppings debris and bird debris on Front Street in front of those. I know we've all gotten several emails and so forth. So for Mr. Bronson or Mr. Ray, so this option number one increases the frequency of sweeping on Front Street to once a month, correct? So,
that's correct.
Okay, very good. So is there an opportunity to look at that in 6 months and see if that specific area and see if once a month is adequately addressing the eucalyptus and bird droppings or to see if we need to go even more frequent in that particular area?
You literally read my mind. I mean, that's what I would recommend. Let's see how let's see what happens with once a month. And if we think, we could even try for maybe 2 or 3 months, go 6 months down the road and then try for a couple of months and do it twice a month and just see if it's a noticeable difference. You know, if it's really an improvement, we could always bring something back to council and suggest that we add a little more money into the program for, Front Street and South 4th Street.
Okay. Very good. Any concerns by members of the council on that approach? Cool. I'm seeing that's a good approach. Great. That's all the items I had for this item. Is there any other concerns or does staff have any questions on the direction we've provided?
No questions from us. Greg, anything else that you want to add?
Not really. That's solid direction. I think this is really timely. I feel it's time we, really come back to where we were back in roughly 2010. So yeah, I think this is great policy direction and I feel like it's really clear.
Yes, I would add that this is one of the most basic services a local government provides, and it feels good to be able to go back to a level of service that we were at a number of years ago and to know that we had the financial ability to provide this higher level of service for our community. And thank you to the council for demonstrating this progress and being able to see a cleaner city as a result.
Very good, thank you. And as a quick anecdote, as I've walked around the city for any number of years for elections, I would say street sweeping is probably in the top five series of questions that I get for whatever reason. It is a very hot button topic for a number of folks. But thank you for bringing it forward, and we can kind of see the results in the next coming months as we move forward. So that does close our regular business items tonight, and I'll turn it to our city clerk to see if anyone is on the line for our second round of public communications at 805-321-6639.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will close public communications at the latter half of the meeting and bring it back for council committee reports. Let's check in with council member Miller, see if she had any council committee reports.
Thank you, Mary Lee, I do. So the Homeless Services Oversight Council met on Wednesday, May 19th. Discussion included the updates to emergency rent relief program. So the state is processing applications for rental assistance, but the process is taking much longer than anticipated. Of the $2 million in funding available, only $30,000 or approximately $30,000 has been paid as of the 19th. Priority is being given to households at 50% median income or less. And then locally, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is the local agency contracted to assist with these applications. So I would urge any landlords or residents in need of assistance to contact the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. And then the second discussion was regarding 150 emergency vouchers that have been issued to the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo. Interested parties may check in with the Housing Authority for eligibility requirements. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that for those reports. So next we'll turn to Councilmember Roberts. Any reports this week?
Nothing this week. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any reports?
Thank you. Yes, I had an Integrated Waste Management Association meeting. Basically, that was the major crux of the meeting was regarding the possible impacts of to member agencies should other agencies withdraw from the JPA. The county has, well, members of the county Board of Supervisors, particularly Debbie Arnold and John Pashon, have requested a report to determine what the fiscal impacts would be. And from the IWMA staff or IWMA consultant, the basic gist is implement the implementation and ongoing services for SB 1383 for individual cities would be approximately $500,000 a year per city. And then for the 42 other established programs to maintain them would be about $1,250,000 per each city. So that would be the fiscal impacts for each individual city should Mr. Pashon and Debbie Arnold have their way and pull out of the JPA. The other issue basically is there will be a rate increase by the rate haulers effective September 1. Basically, landfill, there'll be fees at the landfill, about $1.60 a month, and other increases that haven't actually been determined at this point in time. But once I get all of those, I'll let you know. So that's basically, that was the gist of our meeting. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that, and Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mayor. My only meeting in the last 2 weeks was with the South County Chamber of Commerce. Got to be a part of their first, well, my first South County Chamber business meeting. The conversation crossed many subjects, but I think one of the most amazing parts of it was our discussion of the Buy Local program for Grover Beach and how incredibly powerful it has been, generating over $111,000 in revenue. Mr. Bronson, that's correct at this point, yes?
That's correct, Mr. Rush. It's $111,000 in recorded business spending at local businesses in Grover Beach, 85,000 of which is customer spending and 26,000 is city spending and gift cards for a tremendous ROI of public investment.
And one of the things that I mentioned in our meeting was that there are so many undefinable portions of this project. So we have this money that we can definitely quantify and measure and see, but the number of people that are experiencing and interacting with organizations and businesses that they never have because they have the opportunity to is absolutely fantastic. So that was truly awesome to hear about. Also was thrilled to find out that this program should be funded through the end of the summer, at least through the end of July. So we've got a lot more time with this program, and everybody in Grover Beach needs to go out and do a little support. Let's do this thing.
Very good. Thank you for those committee reports. So my only, actually I had two committee reports, but we had a really good update from Chief Lieberman on the Five Cities Fire Authority. He did mention that we did tentatively approve the budget. Part of the reason we did that is because our next meeting is for the fire authorities actually before the city adopts its budget, and we didn't want to have the budget adoption go past July 1st. And then I did have a 3CE Energy joint policy board and operations board So of which both myself and City Manager Bronson were participating, where there was a discussion about an upcoming change in rate study analysis of what the organization is going to do. That'll be considered at its June meeting. But basically, the main thrust of that conversation is that as 3CE Energy started, it was its savings and its rates were tied effectively to a percentage savings against PG&E policy rates. And so in order for the long-term health of the organization, it's best to kind of decouple that that percentage and basically establish rates that are in accordance with what the organization needs. There is still going to be a savings when compared against PG&E or SoCal Edison, depending upon the jurisdiction. But it's more of a, here's what the organization needs to do from a rate study analysis with the identification that PG&E and other service providers, there's still going to be a benefit compared against their rates. But it's a much more straightforward, a much more organizationally centric position, which I think makes the organization stronger. So we'll consider the final adoption of those at the June meeting. So before I turn to League of California Cities, I'll give Mr. Bronson an opportunity to speak on that one since he was part of that meeting as well. If there's anything to add.
No, sir. I believe you covered it well.
Very good. Thank you for that. So no policy committee updates for me at this point. So just a league update in the fact that based upon the sheer number of bills and the amount of public participation that are happening at the committees at the state level, they're actually asking each representative or senator to limit their number of bills to 12. Each for consideration that they've authored. So that is going to hopefully help streamline the number of bills, but more information on that, and hopefully we'll see some of that conversation happening actually in earnest as people at the legislature get into, okay, this bill is going to stay, that one's going to be wait till next year. So more to follow on that after the June policy committee reports. So next, I'll turn to council communications and see if there's anything that anyone wants to share. And I'll start with Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. Nothing to share. Thanks.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing.
No, I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I have nothing to share tonight. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes, just one thing, and that is I would like to express not only my thanks, but those of many others who have traveled the pike these last 2 days. People actually know where they're going. It's amazing. It's been restriped, and it's fabulous. I just want to thank whoever is responsible, our public works people, and whoever else is responsible for that street being restriped. Thank you, thank you, and thank you.
Very good.
You just can't know unless you drive that street often. Nobody know where, anyway, it's wonderful. So thank you very much.
I may have to go home that way. Very good. So I didn't have any specific council communications to add tonight either, but I'll turn it over to our city manager for any reports and comments that he wants to provide.
Well, thank you, Mayor and council members. And I'll pick up on Mayor Pro Tem Bright's comments regarding the Pike Avenue restriping. Thank you for those comments. And that represents a need that we had, and we scoped it out, designed it, executed it, and now the result is a much easier way of traveling across that important thoroughfare and bike lanes now in each direction. So it's not just vehicle lanes, but it's bike lanes, so that it is a full complete street that is easier to travel on. So we appreciate the comments. And Grand Avenue restriping is coming up next. And that's a bigger, more complex restriping, but equally, if not even more important, given the number of cars traveling Grand Avenue each and every day. So that's coming soon. Stay tuned on that. But on that theme, we have a lot of construction activity all across the city. Of course, our new playground at 16th Street Park is very noticeable. It is definitely taking shape. It's still about probably 3 weeks out from being fully completed, but it is definitely visible and represents a beacon of playground activity for families across our community. We have new lighting at the park as well, a new ADA walkway from the sidewalk. We're looking at a grand reopening coming up in June. Very excited to see that come to fruition. And we also have a great new bike rack, thanks to our public works staff who created this one-of-a-kind custom iHeartGB bike rack that we're piloting at 16th Street Park, but then rolling out to other parks, facilities, and West Grand Avenue locations coming up soon. So stay tuned for more of those bike racks. We also have two street projects underway, one that's almost about completed, just wrapping up some final details on South 14th Street and North 8th Street. And then our next project is just about to kick up on Trouville, Seabright, Manhattan, and other streets right around Grover Beach Elementary School. So a lot of good street projects coming forward. And also we have our Grand Avenue and Oak Park Boulevard improvements coming forward to the intersection. We're waiting until after the Memorial Day holiday weekend to begin those improvements so that we didn't have a significantly altered construction zone at the biggest intersection in the community during a holiday weekend. So we waited until next week to begin that work. And then also I'll acknowledge our street sign replacement project is about to kick off in the next week or two. And as the council is aware, we are repurposing our existing street signs. We're offering those to the community for $20 a piece, with all the funds going to support community beautification activities, such as flowers, trees, and other activities. And as of now, we have over 150 pre-orders, we call them, of existing street signs all across the city. Folks can call Public Works or email Public Works and be able to get on the list, and we'll get those names listed. And it's just a great way to have people get a piece of nostalgia of the city and also repurpose the signs. Every street sign that we repurpose is one that doesn't go to a landfill or doesn't get go to a recycling operation. So again, it's a great way of having some fun and being able to repurpose our history and keep it within the community. Lastly, I'll say that I am pleased to acknowledge that we are now reopened for public access at City Hall and other city facilities as of today. We opened the doors once again after several weeks of good staff work to make sure that our facilities and our operations were safe for employees and the public. So we have completed that work. We have distance markings on the ground. We have sanitation. We have plexiglass. We have all the requirements that we have to be a COVID compliant, safe place for the public and for employees to interact. So our initial reopening hours are Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. As we ease into this and also see what the demand is, we believe that we will see a lower demand going forward because people have gotten used to transacting certain business with the city electronically. But there will still be people who want to access their public facilities, and rightly so. So 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Monday through Thursday is our reopening time for now. We'll reevaluate that and adjust those hours and days as needed. But we look forward to being able to officially open the doors once again. It's been a good opportunity for us, and it's one step towards normalcy that we're all looking forward to. And lastly, I'll say that we are looking at the July 26th council meeting to be our first in-person council meeting once again, following the lifting of the state restrictions coming up in mid-June and finalizing some last details with our council chamber, making sure that we have a safe experience for our council and for our community as well. So July 26th is our date, and we'll look forward to that time to come back to our council chamber as the public space. Thank you.
Very good. I definitely appreciate those updates, and looking forward to having the council in the chambers all together at one time, because I don't think we've all been together in an entire group before July 26th. So, and one last quick comment is I did do a quick pre-order for a couple of road signs on as part of the program, and I am told that there are a very, very limited number of street names or street signs for Margarita, and they might already be might have already been captured. But I did capture a niece, so I'm sure it'll be a nice street when I put it up in my house. So anyway, with that, thank you for that update, Mr. Bronson, and I'll turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, to see if he has any reports or comments this evening.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm very glad to be back over here in this wonderful 64 degree weather. Last week we had 101 already, so I'm loving it coming back. So thank you for opening it back up again and allowing me to come back. As of this evening, no, I don't have anything further.
Very good. Thank you for those, and welcome to the cooler side of the coast. So, so very good. So with that, I don't see that we have any closed session this evening. So we are adjourned until our next meeting. Thank you, everyone. Good work tonight.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.